Yo, what is up, friends? Welcome back to the Iron Leader. I'm your host, TJ Nichols, and I'm joined here by a special friend of mine, Jared Kibbe. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on today.
Y'all, Jared brought treats. What are these treats?
Yeah, these are from right down the road in Benton, Arkansas, Three Best Bakery. Fantastic cookies. I accidentally dropped one on the floor, but TJ said, that looks so good, I want to eat that anyway. And yes. So it is back in the box, and so there will be something, a special treat later where TJ's going to eat a cookie that's been on the floor.
Yes. So look forward to that. So this is episode number 9. And I just want to say real quick that this episode is actually sponsored by our friends over at CompSys, Computer Systems and Services. Y'all remember back in episode number 7, I believe it was, with Justin Lloyd with CompSys. And they provide IT solutions. They also provide hardware as a service, which are computers and systems and stuff that you can pay a fee. And they can come and maintain that for you. So if you're just starting out or if you're a massive company and you don't want to have to worry with IT, CompSys, they are your people. Give them a shout and let them know that we sent you, of course. And so that's that. And we'll get started. I want to pass this over to Jared. Jared, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a native Arkansan. I grew up in South Arkansas, just south of Hot Springs. I tell everybody I have the politician's tail. I grew up in the house my great-grandfather built at the end of a dirt road with a hand-dug well 15 miles from the nearest gas station. You went from there, went to UCA where I met my wife, and we've been married almost 13 years now, I think. Don't quote me on that, so we may have to fix that post in post. I am a founding partner of Natural State Law, PLLC. We are a full-service law firm located in Central Arkansas. We're kind of our tagline is serving the needs of Arkansans, and so we went with the name of Natural State Law because we wanted to, be able to service everybody in the natural state. Now we started in 2015 and since grown to multiple offices and 5 attorneys, and we're still looking for more space and more attorneys and more clients all the time.
So what did you major in college?
Yeah, so I started off as a math and physics double major, and that was great and all, but I found myself only doing math and physics. So I decided that I wanted to branch out and do something else. And so I didn't know what I'd do. So I was like, philosophy, let's do history. And next thing you know, I'm two and a half years into college. I was like, I need to graduate at some point. So I picked political science because it was the smallest major actually offered. And that allowed me to take a full load every semester and get, experience in all the different courses that UCA offered, but also gave me the opportunity to get a major that I may or may not be able to use in the future.
So poli-sci was like your backup? Is that what I'm feeling?
It was a backup in the sense that you have to at least have a major to graduate, and that was the easiest, the least amount of hours to get.
And now you do it full-time?
And now I do it full-time, yeah. It wasn't the intent at all. I went and went into healthcare insurance about 5 years after college, and not using a political science degree, but you had to have a degree to get a job there. So I was using a degree. Nice. Then and went into government. Worked in a couple different worked for the Department of Health for a little while. Then I worked for the governor of Arkansas. So definitely used my political science background there. And then went back into private industry, and now I have a law firm.
Cool. So I want to talk about what you like to do for fun.
Yeah. Well, my wife says I have way too many hobbies, and that's a problem. I don't think it's a problem. I just think there's not enough time in the day to get them all done. I love the Arkansas Razorbacks. I was born and bred in Arkansas, grew up watching the Razorbacks on TV, and they're the only professional team in the state, is what we tell everybody, because we don't have a professional team, and so you're a Razorback. So I love everything Razorbacks. I also love cooking and food. Anything that has to do with trying out new recipes to traveling for food. I have an upcoming trip where, we decided where we wanted to go, and the first thing I pulled out was a spreadsheet figuring out when and where I was going to eat. Oh, and nice. So for every trip, it's so bad to say. I get a spreadsheet and say, this is where we're eating, for lunch. This is where we're eating for dinner. This is where we're eating for breakfast. Then I pass it on to my wife, said, all right, I've got this part of the itinerary filled in. Feel free to do everything else, because if I get to eat, I'm happy. Yeah,
I love it. That's funny. And you are like the only guest so far. This is podcast number 9. And one of those I didn't have a guest for. So out of the first 8 people that I've brought in, you were the first one to bring something to eat.
Yeah, well, so, I'm obviously the first decent human being you've had on on probably, the podcast.
You're
yeah.
setting the bar high.
I am.
The,
you know. Yeah. no, I think when it comes to a place, you want to make sure that you know you're you know you give bring the host a gift. Well, and there was a Three Best Bakery right down the road. I've had their cookies many times, and they're great. And so I thought I'd bring TJ some cookies.
Now they're friends of yours, right?
That actually was the first time I'd met her. One of my attorneys, it's his sister-in-law that is one of the owners of the company. Okay. And so he is always bringing her goodies back to the office with him. And so I've had about everything that she has put out, and it's all fantastic food. And that's why I brought a dozen cookies. To start off as 14, but in the five-minute drive, two of them got eaten. I don't know how that happened. It's must be a mouse
forever
in the
car. A mystery.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I can't look at them anymore, you know, without eating them. So let's dive in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for the listeners, we're going to try to not make this an ASMR event.
Yeah, you know, eating on radio is just great stuff. I mean, it's what everybody really tunes in to see.
That's right. Like, let's see these guys that's going on.
Absolutely.
In
yeah.
Well, cool. What do you want to start with?
I really like the white chocolate cranberry cookies, and also there were six. Now there's five, and as well as some chocolate chip cookies and. These are sugar cookies with buttercream icing.
Oh, my gosh.
So those are the ones that hit the floor, so feel free to start on that one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
we'll start here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for everyone listening, you know I've talked about my wife before. She actually has a baking company. It's called MK Bakes. You can follow her on Instagram. But she actually has been into this company that Jared bought these from because they not only sell cookies – but is it this one or do you want the
it's
other
that one? No, it's that one. It's totally that one I dropped on the floor.
They sell baking supplies. So it's a really neat place if you haven't. This is not this video was not sponsored by Three Best. They just happened to
maybe they
the
need
table.
To be in the future, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, then you know, there could be a sponsorship opportunity down the road. Please eat. So I'm not the only
oh,
one
I will.
Doing this.
I'm gonna eat one of these other ones.
Okay, and I'm gonna turn your mic up once you take a bite so everyone can listen. So you like to cook.
What's
your favorite thing to cook?
Just whatever's new. It's hard to say. What's your favorite? I really love Southern cooking. You know, that's my roots. Mm. That's what I grew up with is, you know, if we're going to fry it, we're going to fry it. We're going to get it out of the garden. We're going to, you know, find what's fresh and cook it. And I've just had this love of Southern traditions and Southern cooking. And so, last weekend, I made a traditional New Orleans green gumbo.
Ooh,
that is a little different. Not something you're gonna get most menus around the country. But I made some of that. Made a giant pot and ended up giving it half of it away because you make a giant pot and you can't eat it all. Yeah,
I didn't get any. What's up with that?
Well, no. there'll always be a next time.
That's awesome. So I like that. I like that. Some people, like myself, I don't adventure out too often when cooking. I can do a hamburger, I can do breakfast, but I don't think I've ever tried gumbo.
Oh, what?
And so I may be hitting you up for some cooking lessons later. Maybe we can do cooking lessons on the show.
There we go. I'd love it.
Podcast cooking lessons. Let's see. Drop a comment or something below if you'd be interested
in
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about leadership. The podcast is called The Iron Leader. This one is sponsored by Compsys, as you can see. Shameless plug there. the concept behind the Iron Leader is from the old proverb that says as iron sharpens iron, so does one sharpen another. So we're here to learn from your mistakes. We're here to learn, you know, what successes that you've enjoyed in life. You're obviously headed down the right path. You're young and, you're founding partner at your law firm. And anytime you get up and speak, people listen. So, walk with me about let's talk about young leadership.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people listening to this podcast are young and, you know, they're getting started in their careers. They're trying to become better. They're just trying to be the best version of themselves. So talk about, you know, what has worked and what hasn't worked for you.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my first jobs, I said I got out and worked in, worked for one of the largest employers in Arkansas and ended up pretty quickly becoming one of the youngest supervisors in the history of the company. And they, I took over a department that had a lot of turmoil. At the time, I'm 23 years old. taking over for somebody who'd been in the place for 40-something years before she passed away. And one of the first things that I was told by one of my team members was, I don't care who's replacing this person. I'm not going to like them.
Oh, wow.
And here I am, 23 years old, coming into an area I've never supervised people before. And I'm not only was I never supervised people, I didn't. This was a new area. I didn't even know the job, but I had leadership that really believed in me. They thought I had, you know, had something that I'd be able to bring in and kind of rally the troops. And one of the first things that I was told, or I told well before I ever got a job, I was told in college, is that treat all of your employees like they're volunteers. You know, they don't have to be there working for you. Yeah, they need a paycheck, but especially in the way the economy is right now, the economy's good. You know, if you need another job, more than likely, there are options for you out there. And so you want people to really buy in. You want people to be a part of your team. You know, volunteers, they don't have to show up. You know, so they're there because they love what they do and they want to make a difference. And so you want to instill that in your leadership, especially as being young, is that you're not there showing that they have to listen to you, or they need to do what you tell them to do, or you know more than they do, because you're gonna turn people away from you really fast. What you need to do is let them buy in. You know, show that their opinions really matter, and that we're all on the same team here. Work's always not always great. It's a stressful environment, but we don't have to add to that. And so let's try to make that, let's get the job done, and let's get it done in a way that, everyone can actually enjoy it to the best, best possible way.
So what happened to that person who was like, I don't care who replaces this guy, I'm not going to like him? Did he eventually come around, or how
yeah,
did it work?
Yeah, they did come around. It was a slow process. That person was not a great performer under the old regime, as I called it. And so not only did they have to get buy-in from them on a personal level, them to want to allow me to be their supervisor, we had some performance issues to work on as well. And so that made it a much more tenuous situation.
Yeah.
But, you just approach it to where, you're not the one making the rules. You're there to enforce it, and everyone knows what the job requirements are. So you'd sit down, and we would go over performance, saying, you did this. This was great. This right here is an area for improvement. Let's see if we can work on this and see if we can get, a lot of numbers. See if we can get this number up for next month and see, really see, what we can do. You just go in there. Don't do it in a non-threatening way, because, once again, you don't want to be everybody's like, who's this 23-year-old coming in telling me what to do? That's the last thing you want.
So what do you think ultimately, won their respect for you?
Is that I wasn't that person. I didn't come in there day one and say, all right, you have to listen to me. Mm-hmm. I'm your boss. You go in there and say, you want to listen to me because I'm going to make you better at your job, and we're all going to succeed together, because I can't be successful at my job if you're not helping me along the way. If I alienate, 15 team members, I'm not going to be successful. And there were some supervisors that started about the same time I did that weren't successful because they had that attitude. It's like, you're going to listen to me because I'm your boss. Oh, yeah, we know you're the boss. That's not gonna win you people over.
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely great advice. We talked about in one of the first podcasts with Sheriff Wright about the difference between an authority figure and a leader. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you totally get that. An authority figure, you can still lead as an authority figure, but not by taunting
right.
that authority, you know, because like you said, that doesn't win over people. And so tell me about your wife. Where did y'all meet? How long have y'all been married?
So we've been married, like I said, almost 13 years. We met at college, and I personally am not a big believer in fate. Things just happen. And
she's going to listen to this, right?
I know she's going to listen to it, but she's heard this story a million times.
Okay.
And I went to the last general education class that I put off, which was speech pathology. Basic speech communications, not speech pathologist. That's a basic class at UCA. You should really check it out. Yeah. No, I put it off, and I went to class, and it was just miserable. I'm never going to go back.
Yeah.
And in my dorm, there was one of my best friends there. His girlfriend was like this little angel that sat on my shoulder all of college. And I'm like, I'm not going back to this class until we have to take a test. And she's like, that's your second day of class. You can't start skipping. He's like, you really should go back to class. I'm like, fine. I'm going back to my second day of class. So I walk in there and I see, it's now my wife, sitting in the seat that I sat in. And I'm like, very territorial. I'm like, what's she doing? So I go and sit down there beside her and, you know, like,
do you not know who I
am?
Yeah,
he's like, this is kind of my seat. I didn't say that, but I was kind of like, well, you know, I picked the seat out for a reason. So I can never show up. But just started talking to her in the first class, and we really hit it off. And so I went back to my friends that afternoon. It's like, so I met the girl I'm going to marry.
Oh,
and
wow.
They're like, really? Well, that's great, but what about the girl you're currently dating? I'm like,
oh no.
I said, well, that will probably work itself out. And it did. It did. Oh, and no. It did. And so it was finally, about a year later, I got up the courage to, you know, really start talking to what's now my wife.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That other girl is listening to this podcast, too, thinking, oh, man.
She knows. She knows.
She knows.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's funny. That's such a great story, though.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, y'all met in college, and a year later, you were dating, right?
Yeah.
Now, you said a year later you were dating, right?
Yeah, we were dating.
When did you ask her to marry you?
It's about a year and a half later.
Okay.
It was pretty quick because, you know, I just knew. You know, it's one of the things, like, yeah, this, you know, I need to make this work. This is she's too great to let get away.
Right.
And but it's been 13 years. It's been a fantastic ride, and look forward to many, many more years.
13 years?
Yeah.
You don't even look old enough.
I know.
That have been married 13 years. Do you have any kids?
No kids.
Do you want kids?
You know, yes. It's a long process.
Yeah.
It's one of those things I always said, yeah, as long as I'm in school, I don't think it's probably prudent to have children. And so that's the reason I have 3 graduate degrees.
Yeah.
So yeah, but no, I think that's something that's going to happen.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So let's talk about, some leadership aspects of, your marriage and, like, you know, we don't want to get too personal.
No, it's fine.
But I know, like, we talk about leadership in the workplace a lot on this podcast. And if you've been married for 13 years, obviously you're doing something right. Either that or you just have really good endurance. And so share a little bit about kind of your successes and some advice as far as, like, now the listeners, they didn't tune in for marriage advice on this podcast. Otherwise we would have called it something else.
Right. But absolutely. Like,
but there is a leadership aspect at home, and I think that's just as important as corporate leadership. So,
right.
Any advice on that?
You know, and it's one of those things, I have to remind myself of this often. It's that, when you disagree, you're just going to disagree sometimes. Don't let it end up in a fight, because, you know, it's, you know, when you start fighting, you know, and arguing about things, that's somewhat of a contagious. It becomes a habit, and don't let that become a habit. You know, disagreements are going to happen, arguments are going to happen. That's just part of it. And I say that. I mean, maybe there's marriages out there, but, you know, I think all marriages, for the most part, there's going to be issues that come up. You just know that sometimes you're going to argue, but don't let that become a habit. And I said, a lot of things is about, you know, you realize that, okay, I did this before. Let's learn from my mistakes. Let's not poke the bear again on this one. And because it can become very toxic if you let it, just, you know, letting habits develop that are unhealthy.
Yeah.
And that's what we try to avoid. But, you know, she's fantastic. She really, really is. We agree on most things. We are both incredibly cheap individuals. I know. I say most arguments occur over money, and we are both very frugal. It's one of those things that you get a text from. You'll send a text like, "I'm getting ready to, I don't want to buy this necessity off of Amazon," and so you send a text like, "Hey, I'm about to spend $20 on Amazon. Is that okay?" And it's just stuff like that. And so we agree on a lot of things. We just know that we have each other's best interests in mind, and that when we do something, we're not doing it to be malicious. We're doing it for the betterment of us, not the betterment of the individual.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. That's great advice. Let's talk about your practice for a second. Okay. So you said you're one of the founding partners. So you have partners. How many partners do you have?
There are three partners now.
Three?
Yeah.
You said now.
Now. Well, it started as just two of us.
Okay.
Me and my partner, William Goose Chanjo. So everybody calls him Goose. That was his call sign in the Air Force. He was a pilot for 23 years and retired as a colonel in the Air Force. He left there and went to work for Altel, was vice president at Altel. Then when Altel sold, he went with some of the senior leadership to run a lot of their businesses. And he was the first person I met in law school. Literally walking in day one for orientation, I've been down to sign my name in, and he's sitting there and says, "Hey, how'd you know to get here so late?" Because registration was like 2 to 6, and I show up at 5:59. And I was like, "Well, why would I show up any earlier? Now I'm just gonna sit around like you." He goes, "I like you. We're gonna hang out." I'm like, "All right, yes, sir." He's in his close cropped military haircut, and we sat beside each other in the first class, and we remained friends. And interestingly enough, that first day, you kind of, like I said, the territorial seat nature, like how I met my wife. We were sitting in the class beside each other, and we sat down beside this other girl, and she's also our third partner now. We remained friends all through law school. We kind of went our separate ways. But when we got ready to open the law firm full time, we both went back to her. And so we founded the firm in 2015, just as kind of a part-time gig. We had a couple little niche field that we worked in. It was just kind of a part-time thing, and we had an expertise, and we wanted to kind of capitalize on it. It was more of a hobby than anything else, but we found ourselves, working really, really hard and a lot of hours, but for somebody else. And we knew that we could work hard. We don't mind putting in long hours. Let's work for ourselves. Because we know we can make this work.
Yeah.
And so we had the idea that we were going to take our part-time gig and open it full-time. That being said, though, we had never practiced law full-time, and there's a lot of technicalities. Each judge wants this, stamp here, sign here, date this, file here, that we didn't know. And so we went to Jennifer, our third partner, who had been was a paralegal for a decade before going to law school and had been practicing full-time, and we're like, "You have to join us, because if you don't join us, we're going to fail." And so she says, "Of course, I'm not going to join you. Why would I? I have a job here. You guys are crazy thinking you can actually build a law firm from the ground up. You guys have any clients?" "Well, no, we can go get clients." She's like, "You don't understand how hard this is." We're like, "Probably not, but we're just dumb enough to try it." And it's like, we will outwork anybody. And so that's kind of what our principle's been, that we founded it because we knew we could be cheaper than most law firms around, but we most importantly, we'd be responsive to our clients. If our clients needed to call us, they were going to call us, and we're going to pick up the phone. We're not going to be waiting a month to get or a week to get back to them. We're going to get back to them as soon as we can. And so we give out our personal numbers. They know that. Their clients know they can call us at any time. And, here we are almost 2 years later, and we got a couple offices, and we're up to 5 attorneys, and we're looking to add space and hopefully more attorneys soon. We're always looking to add clients, too.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's an incredible story. I love hearing stories about startups.
Yeah.
And that's because there's so much work that happens.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
People think they discover your business, they find out about your business, and they think it was an overnight thing.
Yeah,
no, it's not. And that's because for them it was. Mm-hmm. They woke up one day and you didn't exist, and they woke up the next day and you did.
Yeah,
they didn't see the 10 years or whatever it took to build or whatever it is. And so I love hearing startup stories.
Yeah.
So for our guests and our audience listening, what was the biggest struggle starting your firm? And how did you overcome it?
It was, we didn't have any clients.
Yeah.
We had bills to pay. You can't tell the landlord or the cable company, like, "Hey, we'll get to you. We'll pay you when we get clients." It doesn't work that way.
Right.
So we took anything and everything. We told everybody, say, "Give us a call." We went down to law firms that we knew or other attorneys that said, "How much business do you have? Do you ever get calls that you don't want?" Most of the places said, "Yeah, there's clients that we know are crazy that we don't want." I'm like, "Perfect, send them to us." "Anything that's too much trouble for you to do, send them to us." And so we got some, there's some pretty bizarre calls, right off the bat, but we didn't know any better because we didn't know if the phone was ever going to ring again. So we took those clients and we worked with them. And, you know, some people's like, you know, we'd say, we can do all this work and we'll charge it $200. And they're like, okay, that seems fair. When in reality, it's something that we should have charged way more for.
Yeah.
But it was something. It was something to do. It was experience. And those little jobs that we did a year and a half ago are really turning into bigger jobs now because they're referring us or they see something. They have bigger opportunities. They have friends. And the word is just growing because, you know, hey, I helped this person out. They were the only law firm that took the time to help me out on my, you know, bizarre issue. Now we have these, they said, so when someone comes to them and says, hey, who would you recommend for attorney for anything? They send them our way.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's a huge lesson to learn also because, like, that is transferable to any other industry, you know, for the production industry, which is what my companies are in, the production and events industry. Taking the time to help the people when it may not financially be worth your time, yeah. You know, you can make more money doing other things. But actually doing that, it will pay dividends later because absolutely. Those people know people. And if you take good care of them, you know, they might not be able to pay. But later on in life, they may strike gold, you know, or something absolutely. Like that. And they're going to remember you, you know, because you took the time to help them when no one else would.
Well, so I sometimes will go back to law school and talk to graduates that are just getting ready to get on their own. And one of the first pieces of advice I give them is, you know, we attorneys are an industry that the only, you know, we're not expending resources other than our time most cases. Mm-hmm. And so while you want to get out and charge, you know, hundreds of dollars an hour, yeah, that'd be fantastic. But $20 an hour is more than $0 an hour.
I mean, yeah.
If it's sitting there and, you know, browsing the internet, you know, getting lost in YouTube videos or helping someone out that can't afford, you know, an attorney at $200 an hour, but you know what, you know, they're appreciative of any kind of help you can give them. That's worth it. And we try to make that our model early on that, you know, if you call in, we're going to try to help you.
Yeah. So how many clients would you say you have?
Oh, that's tough. I wouldn't even know how to begin to that because so many of my clients are, they just need help with one thing.
Yeah.
And so if somebody helped with something 6 months ago, I wouldn't necessarily call them an active client.
Gotcha.
But they oftentimes call me, which reminds me, I got to call somebody back that I helped a year ago. They said, oh, this is so-and-so. And I'm like, who is that? And so I looked them up. I'm like, oh, I helped them a year ago. That's who that is.
Gotcha.
So I got to, you know, when I get back to the office, I got to call this person and see what they need.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to put a number on. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of your goals and ambitions for the future?
Yeah.
Put you on the spot.
No, that's a tough one. I want to grow something that is sustainable as far as a law practice, but I also want something that's going to survive without me. Mm-hmm. So many law firms and attorneys that I work with, that's, you know, when they die or when they get ready to retire, they have no one to pass this on to. I don't want that. I want to say, when I get ready to retire, which I hope to in the next 5 years, you know, that's what that's what we're all hoping for. Absolutely. Right. That when I retire, I just walk out the door and hand the keys to somebody else. That's my long-term goal. Medium to short-term goal is I want something where I can, you know, be able to help people out, do what I want to do, you know, I worked for myself for a reason because I want to put in hard work, but put in hard work that's going directly to benefit my family, not just hard work to keep my job.
Yeah. So in the early days of the firm, when you had zero clients and you were making phone calls and stuff like that, what are some things that helped you personally? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, when you're starting a business, the business comes before you. Yeah. And that blows some people's minds, but all the entrepreneurs out there are like, yeah, I totally get it. When do you hit a point where the business starts taking care of you back? You know, like you pay the utility bill before you cut yourself a paycheck.
Right, absolutely.
So for you in your journey, what was that like?
You know, this wasn't one day we just kind of said, you know what, we're opening up a law firm. If can't see it, TJ's grabbing another cookie. So yeah. I looked and see the camera's only on me. TJ just grabbed another cookie.
Nope, sneaking it.
Yeah. It was a... we were fortunate that, you know, we could plan for this, that it wasn't one of these days that it was, we rage quit our jobs and, you know, had to, you know, open up this law firm. It was something we got to plan for really about a year. It was in the works. And so we got to, you know, set a little bit aside, you know, to make sure that, hey, you know, we could still take care of our families. And, you know, we are very frugal with a startup. We did a lot of the work ourselves. I know walking into the studio here, you were talking about all the walls that you put up yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you've got a new business. Yeah, we were the exact same way. We had to put up walls. We had to figure out, you know, wiring and cabling. Luckily, we knew people for a lot of these things that we could, you know, that we had helped out in the past, and so they could do for it, you know, very affordable. So it was, we didn't get grossly in debt to open a business, where I think that's where a lot of startups really mess up, is they have large overheads when they don't need it. They think they have to have the best furniture, you know, the newest equipment and everything. And ours was kind of a do-it-yourself mentality. It's like, you know, this is, you know, we don't know if we're going to have a lot of business, so we've got to act like we have no business, because we didn't have any business.
Right.
But we don't know how long it's going to be. So we want to make sure that, you know, used furniture, perfect. You know, we would go to, you know, use office furniture stores and, you know, dig through to find chairs. Like, oh, these look presentable enough. And
Yeah. It
was just looking for deals. And it was tough. But, you know, we lived very lean and still lived very lean, because we're all very – that's just the way we are by nature. And still, that's, you know, how I mentioned how it was with me and my wife. That's the way it is with my office.
Yeah.
I walked by one of my partners the other day. He goes, hey, I'm about to make an Amazon purchase. I said, oh, what do you order? And I go, I'm going to order 4 business card holders. They're like, okay, I think you're approved. And so we always try to hold each other in check for expenses. But yeah. I always like to take it to everybody. So they get an Amazon package. They don't think I'm, you know, buying something crazy. It's just that mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we get lost in the mentality, because we see, you know, other companies, we see other, you know, our competitors or whatever, they might have, you know, nicer things than we have. And, you know, it's really keeping up with the Joneses is what it turns out
absolutely.
To be. Is like, you can go out and you blow a lot of money on the nicest brand new shiny building or car or delivery truck, you know, or furniture, or you can, you know, get something that works, but may necessarily not be, you know, what you had in mind.
Right.
But that decision times 10 or 12 may make or break your business.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's a really good point. And I'm guilty of it myself, of like having a bigger stomach than my wallet, you know, and going out and buying these nice things, and, you know, just because that's what I want to have in 10 years, so why not have it now?
Right. And that's what we are kind of our founding principles. You know, we had founded and helped run companies before, so we knew what it took for companies to succeed, and so we kind of applied those principles to starting up a law firm. It's no different. It's a business. We have to make money. We have their expenses that have to be made, but let's do so with, you know, the bottom line in order. There are a lot of very, very talented attorneys out there that fail on their own or in small firms, because they're very talented attorneys. They're not talented businessmen or women. Mm-hmm. It's like, we can learn the law. We went to law school. We'll bring in talented attorneys, and we know who to talk to figure out some certain things. But what we're bringing is business acumen that a lot of law firms were just really without.
Interesting. So you're bringing in talent.
Yeah.
To really, I don't know how to say this without being like politically incorrect.
No, that's fine.
But like, to compensate for what you lack.
Oh, absolutely. That's something that we talk about leadership principles, mm-hmm. and that was one of my big ones, is we have no problem telling somebody we don't know something. We know where to find it. We know where to find the answers. We know who the people to call. But not all the time somebody may ask me something. I'm going to tell them I don't know it. I'm not going to make up an answer that's going to hurt them professionally or personally. If I don't know if it's not true, I'm just not going to make up stuff. I'm going to tell you, this is what I think the answer is. I don't know for sure, but I'll find out. And that's the way I was when I was, you know, very young, is when one of my team members asked me something, I'll tell them, I don't know, but I'll get back with you. You know, you give me an amount of time, I'll research and I'll get back with you. And that's what we, you know, kind of brought in what I call, you know, talent around us. You know, some of the greatest leaders, you know, Abraham Lincoln, you know, had his, he brought in he wanted to be the dumbest person in the room. And I kind of feel that way. And because I want to have all my friends. I want my friends to be smarter than me.
Yeah.
I want my, you know, I want all my employees and coworkers. I want them to be smarter than me because it makes my job easier to run a successful company if I have incredibly talented people.
That's awesome. So it's all about hiring the people who are smarter than you or are better at the job than you are.
Yeah.
And I think that it's hard for people because you have this mentality of like, not you, but like, you know, somebody might have this mentality of like, I started this company, like who's going to be better than me?
Yeah.
You know, and like, but it's also so important, you know, like for me, you know, in running an AV production company, like I know how to run a soundboard, and I'm pretty good at it, but I would much rather hire somebody who's better to let them do it so I can think about something else.
Yeah.
And delegating. And I think that like I'm in the phase right now where it's like with my business, I want to hire somebody and cause I need help and our business is growing and I can't do it by myself. And I also want to create a place where somebody enjoys working. In your practice, what was it like hiring the first person outside the three of you guys?
Well, it was a it was somewhat of a partnership in a way. Once again, you know, as I told you, we just started calling other attorneys and said, hey, do you have any work for us? You know, anything that you don't want to do? And I got involved in this really interesting business deal, and that was going to have to, I was representing one of the sides, and a contract was going to be drafted. It was, this had never been done in Arkansas, so there was a lot of interesting things to that needed to happen. And so I kind of drafted the a lot of the documents for that, and the other side had their attorney review it, and he's like, this is, he told his client that this was really good work. And that got back to me that there's this attorney out there that had something nice to say about me. So I promptly picked up the phone call and said, hey, you said something nice about me. You're probably one of the only people in the world that says that. I need to take you to lunch. And I took him to lunch, and we started talking. And I asked him, I always ask, you know, how much work do you have? And he said, more than I want. He's like, I turn away work. I'm like, stop turning away work. Send them to me. He said, okay. And so we started doing that. Then not long thereafter, he gives me a call out of the blue, and it said, hey, how would you feel about learning what I do? I said, man, that'd be fantastic. He says, I want to retire at some point, and I've built this business, and I don't have anybody to leave it to. But I wouldn't trust it with just anybody. I need somebody that is willing to sit down with me and learn what I do. Like, would you be interested? I said, absolutely. And so I've been working with him for about a year and a half now on his business. And so we call him as kind of one of our own attorneys. He's kind of on his own.
Wow.
You know, he's mid-70s. He's been practicing law for 42 years, and yeah, he's seen a thing or two, and he's just a great resource for us to have.
Yeah.
And so day one, after my training day, he walked over and set a stack of files on my desk and says, all right, these are my cases. These are where you go find all the answers, and these are the forms you use afterwards, and just kind of walked away. He says, call me if you have any questions. Next time he came over, he says, all right, here's my case files, but I didn't tell you I told you where to find the answers, but I didn't tell you what forms to use. And he just slowly started, you know, and he said, call me with any questions, which of course I naturally always did. Mm-hmm. And he just started bringing me more work and say, here's some files. You should know what to do by now. And now it's to the point where I'm actually working with his clients. And so when he's got a client calls him and needs to talk with them, he sends them to me. And so my guy says he'd rather sit, you know, do all the back end work now. And because he said he's retired to the point where he doesn't want to meet clients. And so he sends them to me. And so it was a great feeling to know that, you know, we have just through relationships, like I said, our business models are relationship. One, we want to make those relationships early on for little tiny things that grow into bigger things later.
So you're talking about growing a business from nothing because you want a legacy. You want something to outlive you. And this firm that you own has been growing, but it's not, like we said, an overnight success. So, like, what advice do you have for people who want it to be an overnight success?
You know, surely it happens. I mean, surely people have the first case, the first client that walks through the door is the big one. Great. Good for you. I wish we had that. We didn't. You know, it's a grind. It really, really is. a lot of the legal profession is just being outlasting the competition. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been fortunate. We've been around, you know, almost 2 years now as full-time natural state law. And, you know, we just keep getting more and more clients. But I've seen a lot of people that I went to law school with and other people that tried to do it that have had to close up shop because they just don't have the clients or the ability or the know-how to, you know, to last it out. And because it's not something you're not going to make $1 million day one. And I'd love to say I want to make $1 million this year, but I'm definitely not making $1 million. It's just, it's a grind, and it's hard work, and there are going to be times where you're not going to be happy with what you made, but that's just got to keep you driven to, you know, get you where you want to be. And it's just got to outwork everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to ask this question on for everyone who comes on and is a guest here. If you could recommend one book that everyone listening to this podcast should get,
that's a tough one. I'm sure you're probably looking for like a leadership book or something like
it
that.
But
one thing we talked about briefly is I love cooking, and so there are some really great cookbooks out there. And I know it's not a cooking podcast, but there's one called Victuals, an Appalachian Cookbook, that talks about Southern cooking, but it does so in more. It's more of a history of Southern cooking and how we eat and why we eat the things we do in the South. And I said, it talks about Appalachia, so Eastern Kentucky, Western North Carolina. A lot of those things really reverberate for Arkansan. Yeah. And a lot of the things is just, you know, why we eat these things. Why is buttermilk a thing? Why, and it's stuff, it's just, it's stuff yeah. that you don't think about, but it's written, you know, very, very well. And another one is Jubilee, which is a food historian essentially took old Southern recipes, many of which from slave times and even predates the United States, and, you know, talks about the history of common recipes. I mean, it's got 10 pages on cornbread. Who knew?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is there to write that's more than a page on cornbread?
Right, absolutely. it's a staple of the American South cooking, and it was been that way for 400 years.
Now, are you like do you like sweet cornbread, or do you like spicy cornbread or something
well,
else?
Well, so sweet cornbread is cake. So cornbread should be savory.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I'm very opinionated about cornbread and its sugar content, and I think that it should have none. But a lot, I know I get a lot of people disagree, and they can be wrong.
Do you like jalapeno cornbread?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite. Absolutely my favorite. Wow. Okay. Well, this is going to be a hard question, or it may not. Who knows? You've been really good. If you could give one piece of advice, so if somebody listened to this podcast, there's obviously a lot of information that just happened.
Yeah.
If they could leave with one thing, what would it be?
Be honest with everyone around you. You know, for one reason, it sets expectations as to what, you know, how you're going to be able to help them. The you know, if I have clients that come to me and say, you know, what are my chances of winning? I said, I've talked to other attorneys. They say I'm going to win. I'll look at them and say, well, I don't share that same opinion. I think you have a case, but do I think you're absolutely going to win? No, because I can't promise that. And any attorney that promises you're 100% going to win, I wouldn't use them. Because yeah. it's when I sign an agreement with my clients, it says, he goes, I can't guarantee a win for you. I'm going to try, and I'm going to work really, really hard because I'm too competitive to lose. I just hate losing.
Yeah.
But also be honest with people, because if you're not truthful and not, you know, dishonest with people, you know, I deal with a lot of people every day, and I can't keep straight lies. I'm not going to do that. So I want to be able to say, well, this is the truth. This is what I would always tell people. So it's just too much of a hassle to not tell the truth to people.
So in my experience as being a certified public accountant, you see these signs with these tax companies that say like guaranteed refund or like something like that. And it's kind of the same thing where it's like you know, as an attorney, a law professional, and I know as a tax professional that, like, you can't guarantee somebody a win in trial. You can't guarantee somebody a tax refund. That's impossible because, you know, if everybody got a refund, then our government, like, wouldn't exist.
Right.
You know, and so, like, somebody has to pay in because our government has to have a fund. You know, somebody has to lose.
Right. And when you go in front of a judge, you never know. I've had fantastic cases that have gone in front of judges, and I've lost.
Yeah.
Just because, for whatever reason, the judge didn't like my client, or the judge just wouldn't believe, you know, just it's not my side. It's just, you know, it's hard to explain, but that's what I tell clients is, if you want to get in front of a judge, you know, it's hard to say what the outcome is going to be because, you know, judges are people too. They have feet. They'll have them. They're not supposed to have emotions, but they do. And I get it.
And I would be worried that, like, if I used an attorney and they're like, I'm going to guarantee you this win, like, that there's not something happening that I'm not seeing
right
behind the curtain.
Absolutely.
You know, like, and I don't want to be a part of that. I want, if I'm going to win, I want to win fair, you know?
Right.
And so, like, I know I appreciate honesty, and I'm sure all of your clients do.
Yep.
And being a leader, honesty is just so important because when people know that you're honest, they'll come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's a secret to growing your business, your practice, and like just developing a good reputation to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being on the podcast.
Absolutely. And I'm glad I got to wear my favorite hoodie too.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I didn't even realize it. I was like, I'm still wearing my cruddy jacket for your
yeah, and everybody's for your video. Yeah. Everybody's gonna see it.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah.
Everyone, once again, this podcast is sponsored by CompSys, and we love those guys at CompSys. They take care of all of our IT needs because we don't want to have anything to do with IT. We just want to say, hey, fix it, and they do it. And they never charge us for anything that we don't have. Oh, now you're taking a cookie.
Well, I took a bite earlier, but you had me talking this entire time.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I'm still hungry. It's not like I'm not hungry.
I was starting to get like, wonder why I was the only one eating the cookies here. So
I'm the one being interviewed.
Yeah, they were delicious. Thank you for bringing the cookies. Jared set the bar high. So from now on, if you're listening to this and you're going to be on this podcast, I expect you to one-up Jared. So maybe we can build our way to the cooking episode with you later.
Absolutely.
On if they're interested in that. So that's all we have for today. If you guys have any questions for any of the leaders that we have, feel free to drop a comment. If you're listening to this on Apple or Google Podcast apps or even Spotify, go ahead and check us out on YouTube. You can search my name, TJ Nichols, and there's a playlist on my YouTube channel called The Iron Leader, and you can actually watch these and you can either, you know, let it ruin your mental image of what we actually look like, or you can just keep that a secret, your choice. But you're missing out on this one because these cookies look delicious. You'll be hungry. And thank you, Three Best, for putting these together for us and letting us buy them and eat them on camera and inside microphones.
Absolutely.
Yep. Cool. Well, we'll see you guys in the next episode.